Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.
Now, what if losing your voice didn't mean that you weren't able to be heard? Well, today on Future Proof, we're looking at a remarkable new piece of tech that could change how stroke survivors communicate, not with brain implants or keyboards, but with tiny movements of the throat and, of course, with AI. We're joined by Professor Luigi Occhipinti, who's a research professor of smart electronics, biosystems and AI at Cambridge. Welcome to the program, Luigi. You're very welcome. Tell us a little bit about the challenge that you're trying to address here. What exactly happens when a patient has a stroke?
Yes, hello, good afternoon. So the problem we're trying to solve is called dysarthria, and this is a condition which happens for many people after stroke, where it's basically a speech impairment where they know exactly what they want to say, but physically can't say clearly. So that creates a gap between the thought that remain intact and the speech, which is impaired. And of course, it's incredibly frustrating. Even, you know, with speech and language therapy, this helps restore some of the functionality in most cases, but very often the problem remains despite years of therapy.
And so typically, if someone doesn't recover well from a stroke, this is a permanent inability to communicate clearly.
Yes, that's correct, unfortunately.
Right. But most of these people can make some sort of noise, but it's not something that would easily be understood by a listener.
Yes, exactly. So what is important for us is that they retain a residual capability to move the muscles in the throat region, as if they were to communicate, even though the sound that is produced is barely audible or is not easy to understand and captured by the listener.
Before we go into the technology, can I just ask you a quick question? The stroke is a blood clot and a brain atrophy, right? So a part of the brain it dies as a result of the stroke, and that affects muscle control, which is partly why these people can't speak. Is that roughly right?
Yes, that's correct. So basically, there is a link between the intention to speak, which is generated in the brain, and then the control of the muscle that actually execute the speech.
Yeah. And so the muscles of the throat are actually intact. There's nothing wrong with them. It's just the inability to fire the cognitive instructions to. Or the mechanical instructions to move. Okay,
that's correct.
So there are a few things you can work with, though, and that's what you've sort of identified with this approach. Tell me a little bit about this Revoice technology you're building.
Exactly. So what Revoice is and does is actually a piece of soft and wearable device which is worn around the neck. And we embed in this device different type of sensors. So specifically, we embed sensors that are able to capture the micro vibrations, so tiny vibrations related to this muscle in the throat area, and these are directly related to the words that are generated by the patient, even if the words are silently muttered, actually. And then we use other type of sensors. So specifically, we use sensors that can capture the patterns in the heartbeat. So that's the pulse wave, and these are still in the neck region around the carotid artery. And we use this information to get a sense of the emotional state of the patient. For instance, if the patient is relaxed or relieved by the fact that the device is working and helping, actually, we can see a clear signal of this emotional state. And the same, unfortunately, happens when we see that the patient is frustrated by the fact that he's not able to communicate clearly. And this is a very important information that we use alongside the information on the muscle movement, on the micro vibration associated with speech. So we use these two pieces of information alongside, some contextual data.
Data?
So contextual data is basically just the time of the day, the temperature, the environmental, the light. So
how can that affect? I mean, why does it matter what time of day it is or what sort of light is there when it comes to extracting what a person wants to say?
Right. Let me give you an example so that this becomes a bit more clear, I hope. So in most cases, you know, the patients that experience this difficulty to speak, they try to, still pronounce just a few words and trying to remove, all the contextual information that are typically enriching our communication. So, for instance, if they feel a urgent need to go to hospital because they feel uncomfortable, but they recognize that it's time, that it's late in the day, they might just say, "We go hospital." But yeah. the listener, they don't know how urgent is actually the need, right? So, and by conveying this information into the AI agent, which is in charge of expanding the sentence to make the communication more fluently, we generated the sentence which looks like, even though it's getting a bit late, I still feel uncomfortable. Can we go to the hospital, please?
Wow. So, so you're getting vibrations from the throat and rhythms from the heart, and these kind of give you an idea of what someone's going to say, and then you use AI to sort of fill in the gaps.
Yes, so we have actually two pieces of AI, so two AI agents. So the first one is with a built-in language model, is embedded in the system where it automatically analyzes and assembles the fragments that generate from the vibration in the muscles into words. So this reconstructs and synthesizes the original sentence in the user's sound language.
Yeah,
and it does this in real time. That's very important because we don't want to generate latency between the actual
person speaking. You don't have to any gap can be frustrating. Yeah.
Exactly. And at the same time, the device analyzes the pulse signal patterns to infer the emotional status. And then if the user wants, they just activate by nodding twice, a simple gesture. A second AI agent will then expand, the sentence in a full, fluent, with emotional cues included in the contextual information included.
Wow! So you're getting the AI to sort of make a best guess based on all of these physical things, none of which are clear words or thinking in the brain. What about brain patterns? Would brain patterns not be helpful here as well in terms of understanding mood, how excited or how relaxed someone might be? Or is that just overly onerous for someone to have to wear a cap all the time?
Of course, we don't exclude that using, for instance, electroencephalography, it is possible to recognize the patterns that generate in the brain. But of course, you can consider the brain is a much more complex system than the heart and the heartbeat, right? So basically, to extract the emotional information from the brain, first of all, we need a system which is more complex, also in terms of how it is made and worn. And second, of course, the pattern that generate require more time and more computational effort, so that it's very hard to have it decoded in real time. So we use basically a proxy of the emotional state information, which is just the variation in the heartbeat, and this very simple and can be captured in real time using our sensors.
Obviously, Google Glass and Apple Vision, there are ways of understanding contextual cues even better, for example, who the person's speaking to, what the environment is that they're in. But as you say, all of these things become more expensive and more cumbersome. How does this lightweight solution that you've designed, how does it work? I mean, are patients actually happy with what the AI is guessing that they're saying? Does this work, in terms of predicting from just some tremors in the throat and a pulse? Does it guess very well what the patient with the stroke is trying to say, this AI?
Yes, actually, in the first study that we've done with a small cohort of patients after stroke who experienced dysarthria, Revoice achieved an error rate in the way these tiny vibrations are converted into words of just 4% or 4.2%.
Wow.
And also the sentence expansion agent, this was working very well. And again, with an error rate of less than 3%. So these are we are quite pleased with these results. I think these are promising. Of course, we need to test the device in larger cohorts, and that's what we are actually hoping to do soon.
Yeah, wow. I mean, that is phenomenal because these people who up until now really struggled to speak, I presume, were often very stressed. And if the situation was urgent, they just could not communicate unless they, I mean, can these patients write things down? I mean, is this totally finding a way to communicate again? Or is it just making things more fluid and less stressful and easier?
Well, we of course we asked the question to the patients. So we tested, you know, their how they perceive the technology, and again we could see that patients they reported over 55% increase in the user satisfaction, which is quite again quite promising for us and encouraging to try and make the technology more widely usable.
Yeah, I mean, do you have to train the AI specific to each patient? Because we were talking about this on a different program, different application, but the idea that if you're reading brain waves, for example, that they're slightly different from one patient to another. If you're reading vocal patterns, do you have to sort of program the AI in the first few weeks to let it understand, you know, what you should be saying and validate the output? Or are these things fairly universal?
So, of course, any AI agent needs to be trained. But in our case, what we have is a first data set, which is used for training the main, you know, engines, the main agents. And then when a new user comes into play, it's just a matter of collecting a few signals and sentences to basically fine-tune the model that has been already, you know, developed using this database. So it's basically just a small, I would say, retrain or transfer the learning that is already in the model to the new patients or to the new languages. The beauty is also that because we work with the signals, this applies to people that can speak different languages. So as long as, of course, we train the synthesizer to emit the sound that correspond to a specific language.
Yeah, and I guess one of the bonuses, these patients could theoretically speak any language to, so whatever country they might be in, they could speak fluently because the AI agent could, in theory, one day translate to the local language. What about the voice? Is the voice built on the patient's own voice, or do they sound like somebody else?
Again, we work on the signal. So, and of course, so as soon as we have the words generated that correspond to the signals that are captured in the throat, then there are technologies that can re-emit the sound corresponding to these words using their own voice of the patient. We haven't done this so far. So far, it was to demonstrate the concept that we can synthesize the words with a standard language and with a standard voice. But of course, this is entirely possible.
Yeah. And I would imagine probably that sense of the patient feeling that this is more them. You might see that, you know, approval rating going up even with that small tweak. Really interesting. And of course, you know, this is a, you know, first or second draft device, just on a small cohort. Very promising to be able to restore speech to stroke patients who are essentially living in a trapped voice. So very cool. Really nice to speak with you. Thank you so much for joining us. Now, that is Professor Luigi Occhipinti, who's a research professor at Cambridge University. Thanks, Luigi.
Thank you so much.
Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae,
proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.